Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to The Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm Marcello Rolando. The mission of The Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal opportunity. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing the creative artist and political unity as solutions to our challenges.
Good afternoon. This is Marcello Rolando. Welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. My guest today is film director Marco Calantari. Hello, Marco. How are you? It's so great to talk to you. I asked Marco to be on the show because he has directed the short film The Shaman, that's S-H-A-M-A-N, which will be premiering at the 2015 Tribeca Film Festival. So Marco, first of all, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm extremely excited that Tribeca was inviting this film because we're doing our world premiere there.
Yes.
And we have not been working on this film for almost 2 years, and I was always hoping so much to bring it to one of the big festivals. And when I got the call from Tribeca, I mean, it was Christmas and Easter for me on the same day.
Yeah. Yes, I can imagine. That is great. Well, as you say, if you want to be on a big festival, Tribeca is certainly that. You say you've been working on it for 2 years. You shot it in Austria. And in Iceland, is that the case?
Yes, exactly. I'm Austrian myself, so I mean, I'm living in Japan already since 5 years, and before that in China, so my whole work life has moved towards Asia. But of course, still I'm very rooted in Austria. I have a lot of friends there and a lot of filmmaker contacts, so for me it was the most logical step to go back there and make the film there, because there was so much goodwill from a lot of people to help us and support the project.
Excellent.
So Austria was just the perfect choice for this project.
Wow, how was it shooting in Iceland? I've been to Austria, but Iceland? Wow. What was that like?
I was living in Iceland for 1 year, actually. So I had certain contacts there, and I love the country. It's such a beautiful place. And, I mean, it was really difficult to get there. So we could just travel up there with a small team. So we took the costumes with us. We were getting some stand-ins in Iceland who were like students from the Icelandic Film Academy, and they helped us. And then we just went up there with the camera, hand luggage, rented two cars, went out there and shot it. And it looks fantastic. So,
And you had a number of different artists from different nations, yes? I mean, it's like an international operation.
Yeah, that also, of course, comes a little bit from my work life so far, because I've been now working in so many different countries and got a lot of chances to get in contact with different people, and everybody was so supportive. So I've been working in India, I've been working in Shanghai, in Japan, in Ukraine. So, and of course, then as soon as I make a short film and I want everybody to be involved, I make a lot of calls and say, come on, you help me with this, come on, help me with that. And everybody's so friendly and everybody jumps on board, and suddenly you have a team that's like half around the globe.
Fantastic.
And a lot of these people, I've actually, especially in post-production, I've never even met them face-to-face during the entire post-production. So we were just in contact on email and Skype and whatever, and we worked it out. Yeah.
Yes, that's our world today. As with yourself, most of my guests I've never met. I've seen their work and so forth, but I've never met them. But but that's where we are now, where everything is electronic and very 21st century, and it all works. It's still, we can be, I think what's fabulous about it, at least one of the things, is you can be anywhere in the world and work with anyone in the world. Can't top that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, you then also end up to just keep on email with those guys who just live around the corner. I try to avoid that.
All right. Well, let's talk about the film, The Shaman. I always want to say shaman, but it's the title, as I understand, is pronounced The Shaman. Is that correct?
Yes.
And it takes place in the year 2204, at a time when the world has been at world war for 73 years. So, as we talk about perpetual war these days in 2015, even hearing about that, you know, this is for obvious reasons. I've seen the trailer, those who may know about it. It's called science fiction. But I have to say, the way it reads to me, and the trailer even, it's so realistic. I forget that it's science fiction. I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but
no, absolutely.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, you go on.
Yeah, so that was also the ambition from the start, because I didn't want to just create such a kind of glossy, meaningless, unorganic kind of science fiction piece, but something that's very related to us.
Yes.
I like this kind of science fiction that was a projection of our life into the future, and I also like the idea that the concept that a lot of our answers, as our questions about the future, can actually be found as answers in our past. Because that's where we come from, and that's our source, and that's how we will develop further on. So I like this kind of unity and that connection. So I tried to create a film where a lot of these original sources, like also shamanism, which was like a religion thousands of years ago, is now suddenly being redetected by mankind.
Nice. And
because they have the technology to unlock a lot of secrets that were like hidden or lost in the past. So that kind of connection was really a joy to work on. And that's also why I felt the film should have a very realistic kind of look, despite the fact that it was not produced on a super big budget. But to get that kind of grittiness in it, I felt was very helpful also for the believability of the story.
Well, I have to say, in my opinion, you've certainly accomplished that. It has, its eeriness is that, for me, it is so realistic, it's so possible. And it's so possible because we can relate to it now. I mean, your shaman has certain powers, given that we are now in 2204. Talk to us about some of the abilities. I mean, he's still human, yes? I mean, he's a human being, and he can die in war just like any other human being. But he does have powers that that we do not right now, anyway. Can you talk about some of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, shamanism is really an old thing, and what fascinates me so much about it is that it has been really emerging in all parts of this world. I mean, you have it in the ancient history of Africa, and in Siberia, and in Malaysia, and in America. So it's like it's everywhere, somewhere rooted, but it's somehow forgotten. It's just not being practiced that much anymore. But it's still something that's existing here and right now. And it's playing in a way with this concept that we all want to know what's behind that curtain that we can't see through.
Yes.
On the netherworld, or all these answers that we can't find right now. And a shaman is a person who has a kind of access, who has the possibility to go through that curtain, to look on the other side. And I like the idea, because of course, movie making, storytelling is always about characters and about people, and
yes,
how this would relate to us. So if I imagine I would be a shaman, what would that shaman, what would that mean for my life? It would actually make me a very torn kind of person. And that's also how I approached the shaman main character, that he's somebody who lives on the edge between light and shadow, and he doesn't really know where he's belonging to. So the more often he crosses that border, the more torn and confused he gets.
Yes.
It doesn't necessarily make him happy. And that again relates to us people.
Exactly. Exactly. Very often we find that when we have special gifts of any kind, they can sometimes feel like a curse as much as a blessing or a miracle even. Tell me about this quote, "God sleeps in the stone, breathes in the plant, dreams in the animal, and awakes in the human."
This is a quote I found online long time ago. I've been working on this story already like 8 or 9 years back. I started to write this whole thing as a full-length feature script couldn't really realize it, and then I just put it aside, and then when I wanted to make the short film, I took the story out again and turned it into the short film. So that that line in the very beginning was an original kind of inspiration for me, thinking a little bit more about the complexity of things and about the fact that in our modern life we have lost a little bit the view on this kind of connection, or about realities that are just there, but they are forgotten or not understood. I'm not such a really spiritual person myself, necessarily, but I believe that I just don't know, and that a lot of things are possible, and just because I don't know, I can't say that's not happening or that's not possible. So I like this kind of playing around with these, with the elements and with the fact that everything around it is connected, we are part of it, and that shaman has a certain special access to that. An access that you normal people maybe won't have because we just didn't learn it, or we have just lost our feeling for that. So that's a little bit where this line is coming from, and where I wanted to make the story take off from.
Fantastic. That reminds me, it was Socrates who said, I believe, I know that I know nothing.
And,
exactly. I remember even when I was graduated from at least undergraduate school, if not graduate school, I remember the day of graduation and thinking, well, now I feel prepared enough to go to start the to go to college. And now that I have the degree, I feel like I'm ready to go to college, but not necessarily into life. But there is a real connection, I think, that I know there is between your characters and your short film on The Shaman and today's world. But there's also this sort of, if I'm not reading too much into it, there is in the subtext what you probably found so fantastic about the quote that I was talking about earlier, because all of this information, this creativity, this magic, if you will, that it is in, it comes from the source of everything that's around us, whatever name we choose to give it, and everybody's got a different name for it, but it is in the plants that we are destroying and the animals that we're, you know, killing off into extinction, and, you know, on the rainforest and everything else, is the source of, or the magic of a shaman come from all of the elements in the earth that's around him? And I'll stop my question right there, but I do want to ask what's beyond the earth, but we'll get to that in the next question. What is that the source of his magic, or is it the rediscovery of the, as you've mentioned, the ancient practice of shamanism?
Well, I think it's maybe not the source. I don't think that a shaman necessarily himself, as in my kind of shaman world, as in my kind of little shaman microcosm, the shaman necessarily also doesn't have all the answers. He's basically just somebody who can connect dots, or who can cross over with a link between those two places, so he can cross over and find some kind of answers. And in our story, animism is also a strong element. So we are seeing that not only humans and animals have souls, not only machines have souls. And if you want to interact with them or even fight them, you can do that in another realm. And that's also where this quote never comes in. So that's basically everything in this world is connected. And not only I as a human being have a soul, maybe also my car has a soul, and maybe my microwave has a soul.
Yes.
And the machines are able to interact with that, and that makes them warriors, because that quote that also starts those stories, if you can heal something, you can also kill it. And mankind rediscovered shamanism as an art, but because there is this big war going on, they actually abuse shamanism and turn shamans into weapons.
So they are spiritual warriors?
Yeah, and that's basically how we define them. Yeah. And that's also the controversy of the whole story, because that thing that actually originally is really designed to heal people and help people and make us understand is being turned into its contrary. So, and I have the feeling that this happens so many times. Every time we find some kind of protection or some kind of healing, it always, in a way, also used against us. Somebody will take advantage of it. A lot of our technology comes from making weapons and creating armies, etc. So there's so much to a lot of development that's happening, and I wanted to somehow position the story in a way that it is stirring up a little bit this kind of controversy.
So I guess, we learned that, of course, from Einstein, who didn't intend to create an atomic bomb, but rather to discover how to harness atomic energy. So it all depends. It's like art. It's in the eyes of the beholder what we make of the what we learn and knowledge and the wisdom we acquire, I guess. And unending. It's a battle that... No wonder they're at war for 73 years, because it is a battle that is fixed between two different kinds of philosophies. And perhaps in this in your film, it's actually two different kinds of entities. I don't want to give away too much, but there is a different it's a different kind of war, for all of its connection that you've made with us in the 21st century. It's the wars of fought between well, why don't you tell us? Because then you can decide how much you want to tell us. Who are the humans fighting against? That's my question.
It's still humans against humans, but technology, of course, has advanced a lot. So humans are more and more relying on technology to fight each other, and that technology is really to crack. That's why they are using shamans to basically destroy or convert the other side's technology. There are like machines that become so big that with conventional warfare it's very hard to destroy them. But they try to do it on a spiritual level. So with this kind of technique, a single person, just through psychological manipulation, can bend and convert the soul of that enemy machine. That's the basic idea.
All right, that was what I was looking for, and you nailed it. I just didn't know how much you wanted to give away, but we're going to take a break. Everybody, stay with us. I am talking to Marco Calantari, who is the director of the short film The Shaman, which is premiering at the Tribeca Film Festival this year, 2015. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Successful actress Lake Bell had fallen into that category of workaday supporting roles never really considered for the lead. So what does the talented actress do when she is relegated to a status less than her aspirations? Write, produce, and star in her own film. That's what. And as a result, we have the opportunity to enjoy
In a World.
Carol's dad is a veteran voice actor. Carol aspires to a voice career as well, but Dad, and just about everybody else, considers this to be a man's world. So Carol is relegated to teaching voice classes to wannabes, but still, the dream lives on. When the voiceover master passes, a vacuum emerges. Who will intone the dramatic narration for the sci-fi blockbusters? You know, the ones that begin with,
In a World.
When Dad demeans her yet again, Carol decides to proceed despite him. In a World is an accomplished indie exercise. Bell has ably showcased her own skills while providing us with a light and enjoyable journey. The characters have depth. Their humor springs from underlying relatable human foibles, exciting us to care about the outcome.
In a World where film lovers seek the art that feeds them comes In a World.
Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Well, welcome back. Here we are, The Reasonable Voice, Blog Talk Radio, and our guest today, the director of the short film The Shaman, Marco Calantari, is on the line from Beijing, China. I didn't realize he was so far away when we first started talking, but tell me, how are things in Beijing?
Yeah, Beijing is a lovely city. I mean, I've been living here like 5 years ago, so I still have a lot of friends, and it's good to come back. Weather's not so great, but good to be here.
Well, as we were talking during the break, Marco, it's quite a procedure to get into any film festival, but I would imagine Tribeca, like Sundance, they have such standards. How can you give us a little of the story about how you, how the shaman and you got to Tribeca?
Well, of course, the first step is to finish the film.
Yes.
And that was quite a task, you know, because the post-production took a while and also then took longer than we expected. And, of course, I'm not such a film festival experience kind of person. This is the first time we are participating at such a big festival. So
yes.
We have sent out the first WIP copy already last autumn. At the time, the film was not finished yet. But fortunately, Tribeca has this rule that you can then submit a more updated copy later.
So
I had to get before Christmas. But because I was in Austria and Christmas to visit my parents, and the Austrian Postal Service told me because there are so many Christmas presents being sent all over Austria now, so whatever I sent to New York now will never reach there before Christmas. So
oh, my God. Yes.
I was contacting a friend in New York, and they were so kind to just receive the DVD data for me by email, and they were burning the DVD and brought them to the office personally and then delivered it to so that was a little bit of a story behind
it. Yes.
So finally,
so it sounds like there is a little spiritual help out there for the shaman. Somebody's watching over. That's good. Well, I'm glad it all worked out, and I look forward to its premiere. So we've talked about so much about the you and the film, but still, I'm still stuck on what impressed me so much, and I don't want to talk it to death, but I just have to say that, especially for those who might just be tuning in, the reality, the connection to where we are today with our concerns about how we're using the earth and its resources, how we treat the rest of whatever and whoever lives on this earth, and that we seem to find more and more reasons to make war, and so few of them seem to be justified. But we are introduced in your film to the shamans and their people who have been at war for 73 years. The year is 2204. They are spiritual warriors in the sense that they want to defeat their enemy, but they want to do it in a, dare I say, honorable way. Is that a good way of putting it?
Maybe not necessarily. I was when I was developing the full-length feature story, of course, I had to put a lot of effort into creating a very deep kind of world and work a lot on backgrounds, etc. So by also putting this war in such a long kind of perspective, I was imagining how would it be for people who are born in this war. Basically,
yeah.
They grow up knowing nothing else. So for them, this kind of war environment becomes a reality, like a circumstance that they've never seen something else. They've never seen peace. So they grow up in this thing, and that's why I whole honorable kind of concept is also lost in a way, because that's for nothing else. It's just the way they live. I was always so shocked about the reports from Afghanistan or countries like that, where really there are like civil wars going on for decades, and the children who grew up there, they have really never seen anything else. I come from a very protective, safe country, Austria. I mean, there's really nothing bad happening there. Every time we see something on the news, it's about somebody lost a dog somewhere, or it's like,
yes.
It's not really great happening. So I grew up in this really protected, safe, beautiful environment,
yes.
And it's very hard to imagine how other people grow up, and that they would just be stuck in something completely different. And that's something that was a little bit of a source for the inspiration of that story.
You know, when you say that, it's a very good point. I am saying that they're at war for 73 years, which is still a good lifetime. So obviously, of course, as with Israel and so many other places, there are children born into war and they know nothing else. I hadn't put that together, but I have, because you've mentioned, you know, you were from Austria. I was in Austria and in Germany, for that matter, in Italy, Europe, all around Western Europe, many times every August I would vacation. And a chunk of that time was during the Cold War. And I remember meeting a family in Austria. And I asked, you know, because life is so beautiful, the Bavarian Mountains, I mean, everything, you know better than I. But unlike most American tourists, I would get in a car and just drive. I discovered the Autobahn that way, which is definitely my kind of driving. but in any case, I asked what it was like because of all the things that were going on at the time. And he says, well, you know, we get up, we turn on the television, and we wonder what, at that time, the Soviet Union and America are going to do that's going to, that impacts us because we have no control over it. We're just in the middle watching and on the news and hoping they don't blow each other up and us with them. And that thought lived with me. And now just what you've mentioned brings it back. But back to the film, The Shaman, premiering at Tribeca. We started to talk about the technology and how they are actually, the shaman go, and let's talk about the other side, where they go and are able to communicate with the, is it their soul or the soul of their enemy or the soul of the, or does the technical war machine have a soul? How does this technological war actually get waged? That's my question.
I think the idea of that shaman concept, as we have been developing it, is that every object, every existence in this world, be it a machine, be it a human being, be it whatever, has a soul counterpart in the netherworld. And the shaman is somebody who can step over. So
yes.
In my vision, the shaman would, as a physical existence, actually step over.
Mm.
So he's still also existing in this world, so you still see his body lying on the ground, but he's also over there on the other side, and he's able to find and source and track the soul of that machine in the netherworld, and then start a kind of conversation with her. So it's basically, it's about manipulation. It's a game with psychological manipulation between the shaman and the soul of that machine in the netherworld.
Yes.
And the shaman has only very limited time for that, so he maybe only has these 4 or 5 minutes, and in this time frame, he has to convince that soul of that machine to change sides. So, to me, I'm always bringing this example of shamans being like car salesmen. You enter the car shop, you have absolutely no intention to buy a car, and when you come out, you are the owner.
You are the guy.
You just talk your English. So that was a little bit my concept of this warfare. So we have been just doing a lot of research about manipulation and about how to trick people, how to cheat people, how to make that possible, that within a few lines you can actually really turn somebody around. That's for me one of the most interesting things about the concept. It's not about big action and big war and big guns destroying big machines. It's actually just two people in a room having this kind of psychological fight with each other.
It really is amazing. And of course, I saw that in the trailer, that the human being, the shaman, and the machine, the technology, also having not what, as you say, not just what we usually see in these in films like this with the man against machine, but it really is the soul of man against the soul of a machine, and it's a psychological warfare of one outmaneuvering the other mentally. And the machine has to, like with any argument, I guess, to win in any debate or whatever, you have to get a hook into your opponent, something that unsettles them, something that throws them off their out of their comfort zone and off track. And this happens in the shaman because the shaman has a secret that we don't really, we don't know what it is. We have hints about what it might be. How much can you tell us without telling us too much? Is it the secret that is his Achilles heel for the shaman?
No, the secret I can't reveal now.
No.
People have to see the film.
Exactly, don't want it.
No worries. But the shaman, they have to do a lot of research before they go in.
Yes.
So what they do is they have the, we call it the squire or the tiddler,
yes,
who is the assistant of the shaman, who helps the shaman prepare. And these guys are doing a lot of research about, they just try to gather whatever information they can get about this enemy. So what kind of personality is this? Where are the weak points? Where are those character points where they could get that kind of hook and then start their psychological attack, because they have so little time. So they have to plan this like a chess game.
Wow.
And they have to anticipate the questions and the reactions. And of course, it's much easier to convert or manipulate your target if the target is not aware of the manipulation.
Yes.
The more doing in our life every day.
Yes.
Which is something that's very, very high concept, because that's just how we live and how we operate, be it with our children, be it at work, be it with the people we love. There's always so much direct or indirect manipulation happening every day. And that's just us people, and it's also necessary in a way.
And you make a point. It's not just the politicians and the way they try to manipulate us, but business, marketing, neighbors, children, pets, even. Everyone is manipulating, and it's not always a terrible trait, but it certainly can be. But isn't there a point also, I think, that the shaman's superiors make clear to him? I know you've been stressing there's a limited amount of time, but you also mentioned that the moment the machine knows anything about him, that's when he becomes in danger. So he has to keep some of him closed off as much as possible, and as long as possible anyway, before engaging the machine, because once the machine has even a piece of information, it can build on it to do its psychological warfare. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And then these machines could also do a counterattack, etc. So, I mean, there can be a lot of levels how this kind of confrontation can play out. And I believe also the longer this kind of war and struggle and this kind of tactics will be used, the more the other side will be able to anticipate it. If you do it the first time, it's very easy. But the more this happens, the more the other side will be prepared, because every weapon has a counter weapon, has a counter strategy. So that's something I always find quite intriguing about the concept.
Now, before the shaman is sent in, is the shaman sort of a last resort? Is he what we call the trump card?
Yeah, absolutely. I always saw them a little bit as rock stars. Because there are not many of them. Most soldiers have actually never seen a shaman in their life with their own eyes.
Yes.
So if they show up somewhere, then it means that anything else has failed. And because it takes so long time to educate them and to train them and to develop them, and they are so vulnerable, so it's so easy to kill one of those guys. So they are really like the special jury of every army.
Yes.
And they would just only be there if nothing else works, and then they will just try to work it out. So I like this kind of idea that, like I say, rock stars, that when they go somewhere, they create a lot of hype, and there's a lot of respect for them. But at the same time, it also makes them extremely lonely. So they are just basically traveling from frontline to frontline, trying to solve all these issues.
Wow. So they are the special forces, and they are, in part, extremely special because it's not as much, as you've said, it's not a physical war, of blowing up things, but rather a psychological, a mental war, spiritual war even, between two great minds and souls. How's that? Who's the actor who plays your shaman, number one? And the shaman's character name, I guess, is it just Shaman, or?
The actor is Danny Shaler, who is a British actor, and we were casting him before our shoot, and we really saw a lot of actors who were all great, but Danny was absolutely outstanding, and he put so much effort and so much energy and so much passion into his role.
Yes.
He really became that guy. The character's name in the film is Joshua, which is just briefly mentioned, but
Danny
really became the guy. It was an amazing performance, and especially because our shooting time was quite short.
Yes.
So we had just these 5 days in Austria and one day in Iceland. So an actor within these 5 days needs to get into that mindset of so many different stages of his character development, and that is just such an extreme curve that he's going through. So I think that was quite a tour de force and quite an amazing performance that he delivered there. And
yes.
I think it also really got to him. But I'm very happy now with the result, I hope so. And I think the performances in the film are really what makes this piece stand out. Because CGI, and big special effects, etc., that's a question of technology. Of course, it's also a lot of question of talent and
yes.
the people involved. But at the end of the day, filmmaking really comes down to the performances, to the way how believable a character is, and how much the audience can identify with him. And I'm so grateful to have the possibility to work with these great actors. It's Danny Shaler as the main actor, David Cyrus, it's Susan West, the Soul of the Colossus, really great, great people.
Well, I agree. The performances, the visuals, your production staff, post. I mean, so much has gone into this that is so impressive. And again, I think this unique vision of yours, that this makes a connection to our present day reality. And instead of just blowing things up, I love that it's a psychological war. It's soul to soul, belief to belief. It's a whole new level of protagonist and antagonist. I think it's a marvelous achievement. I wish you all the best. Is there any way that or any contact information you want to give anyone to? How do we? I guess people can find the trailer just as I did. But you want to give a Facebook page or how people can find out more about the film? Your website, whatever. What would you like? Tell us what you want.
Yeah. The easiest way to find The Shaman is on The Shaman website. That's like marcocalendari.com/shaman.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically so the base from there. You can access Facebook, etc., Twitter, and all the things that we have. Or it's on Facebook, it's facebook.com/theshamanmovie. So that dot shaman dot movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's also a good way to accept it. But basically our website is the main link, and the constantly updated. There's a lot of more material coming up, and that's also a very exciting process to slice by slice and bit by bit to let people enter the world of the shaman.
Yes.
That's really a joy to do.
All right. Well, Tribeca Film Festival 2015. You can see the 2204 of The Shaman. This, I've been talking to the Shaman director of the short film, The Shaman, Marco Calantari, and from Beijing. And we've had an incredible conversation this afternoon. I thank you so much, Marco, for being on the show, and I wish you all the very best at Tribeca. Okay?
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Very much appreciated.
Bye now.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Making a great horror movie is an endangered art, with modern filmmakers often choosing to put forth shocking images and gory torture scenes instead of developing a compelling, frightening story. Thankfully, we have films like The Babadook to prove that creative horror still works. Amelia lost her husband in a car crash on the same night her son Samuel was born. She still reels from the loss, drifting through a world where every day is drab and gray. Her contentious relationship with the feisty Samuel sours further when she reads him a chilling bedtime story featuring Mr. Babadook, a boogeyman who Samuel becomes convinced is real and trying to kill him. As mother and child both begin to lose sleep over the harrowing story, their grasp on reality loosens and the threat of Mr. Babadook grows ever more real. The Babadook grew from a low-budget production in Australia into a worldwide phenomenon, winning nominations, awards, and respectable box office. To be sure, it wasn't widely discovered on screen in the U.S., but its reputation continues to flourish, and those who find it are well rewarded with intelligently earned thrills and chills. You'll want to watch this one with the lights on. The Babadook. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. To be blue and black, or white and gold, is not the question. I have grounds for concern more relative than this. For almost a fortnight, the thing for millions has been dresses, whether color combo or missing fake. So we might have missed the play's the thing, wherein we'll either succeed or fail to catch the conscience of those who would be king, while grinding their heels on the backs of hallowed American souls. Cast in corporate media fashion folly and performing perfectly superficially, while those on global watch demand progressive change from a taste for top-down politically bought red meat, congressional tomfoolery, and supreme ill-conceived Citizens United dividing affordable health care common sense between the citizenry for and against saving money on health insurance.
perchance to dream. Ah, there's the way forward. Being so socially fashion-conscious, it took the death of Star Trek icon Mr. Spock to bring reality back to media from clothes horse focus. While neither Trekkie nor Trekker, I pray, may the Force be with you, Leonard Nimoy, as we follow your appreciative illustration for galactically creative and human diversity. Let's hope all the world's not a CPAC stage where some find gender identification, truth, and intellect more challenging than being redirected by old media's passion to hide apace in social media's characters. With political hacks play-acting, costumed in red, white, and blue, we may be distracted from murder most foul on darkened Russian streets, unlike the glare of exposed character Jihadi Johnny. So transfixed by unworthy deeds, we fail to notice Black History Month has come and gone all too quickly after final bow of Stuart Scott and Maya Angelou, with only a passing glance to historical Selma. Truly, are interracial couples still shocking? Or is it that Hollywood films are, like conservative political stars Boehner, Tommy Lauren, and other CPAC cruisers, simply trailing behind the 21st century reality of cable networks and slice-of-life Americans on Main Street post-Loving versus Virginia? If we but listen, we'll hear. FDR, Abraham, Martin, John, and Bobby still beckoning us to be, or at least not to be, the conservative blight believing neither Earth nor all that live upon it matters. If we paid as much attention to the hunting ground as we do to dress color debates, perhaps we could prioritize saving lives from sexual assault on college campuses with intent to defile. Whatever the IQ of those being led by their noses, sniffing coke money that primes redneck governors with greenbacks, conservatives are focus experts on single-minded goals. So no matter how much incredibly talented Meryl Streep and Jennifer Lopez cheer the far less talented, the gallant, overdue, but amazing Oscar appeal for economic gender equality wins no awards from male or female conservatives who refuse even to support the ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment passed by Congress in 1972. For women to be equal under the law of the land, ratification of ERA by 3 more states is needed. And still, the majority of minority women will not have won economic equality. So much information, so little knowledge. So much flying by us at our fingertips, and yet, in the midst of feet of snow, we're missing that global sea levels are on the rise and polar bears in decline. While Oscar selfies are fun, Neil Patrick Harris' predictions were not, and House of Cards' return, inconsistent at best. But who isn't when embracing predictable, petty, and frivolous distractions? Everyone needs social time out for family fun and friends, but America's survival depends on its citizens focusing on the original intent of both the Declaration of Independence and Lincoln's preserved, emancipated United States of America. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of The Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.